Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Today's show is sponsored by KO Tickets, serving fight fans since 1999. Spring schedule is heating up. KO Tickets is your hook. West Coast fans, we got the return of Chocolatito on March 5th. We got Virgil Ortiz on March 19th. East Coast fans like myself, Edgar Berlanga, headlights a stacked card at the Hulu Theater, also on March 19th. And of course, we got Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano. KO Tickets deals direct. Call Jim Boone at 702-591-1638. That's 702-591-1638. 1638. What is up, everyone? We welcome you into another edition of Inside Boxing Live. I am your host, Dan Canobio. Got a huge one planned for you today. Sugar Ray Leonard is here. An absolutely amazing interview about all his big fights, the biggest moments of his career, what he thinks about the current crop of fighters today. So you don't want to miss this interview with Ray Leonard. Also want to share about my friends over at Underdog Fantasy. This is the best and easiest place to play fantasy sports and win cash prizes. They have an awesome pick'em game going on right now where you can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. I like money. Ray Leonard likes money. All you got to do is correctly pick between 2 and 5 player stats, and you can take home some cold hard cash. I like cash. They also like boxing over at Underdog. They have boxing lines. They have UFC games, NFL, NBA, soccer, esports, so much to choose from. You want to use code BOX, B-O-X, and if you do that, you get a free deposit match up to $100 when you sign up and make your first deposit. That's code B-O-X, my friends at Underdog Fantasy. And now let's get to Sugar Ray Leonard. It is time to bring in our guest this week here on Inside Boxing Live. You know the name. You know the face. He is Sugar Ray Leonard. This is a thrill for me, Ray. And, you know, you and my father go back many years, and I've been following, of course, your career and your life, and it's awesome to have you here. Thank you so much. And how's everything going?
You know, Dan, good seeing you, man, and good talking to you. Your father and I go way back, way back, okay? But I'm looking forward to it, big guy.
Yeah, that's cool. I found some photos of the two of you guys, in Vegas. You guys were wearing neon tank tops, had the sunglasses hanging off the neck. Real 80s look. I love that.
I got to see that. Is it a photo or is it video?
Photo. This is before cell phone, cameras, which is probably a good thing for all you guys back in the 80s. But, nice photos, that are in his office and, hearing the stories through the years, secondhand of, those marvelous fights that we're going to get into in this interview. But I've been doing this thing, Ray, interviewing the legends. I had Roy Jones on, I had Bernard Hopkins, now I have you here. And I always like to ask our legends is, what are they up to these days? Obviously you're not training, or you are. I see you on Instagram still hitting the mitts. But like, what's a day in the life for Ray Leonard these days?
It's, like you said, I work out, man, and it's stimulating. It's really, because of what's been going on with this, I just want to say society, but world.
Right.
From the pandemic, this to that, I mean, it's been crazy. But you know what? It's like a fight. It really is. You just got to be in shape, be ready for it, and stay on top.
I see you golfing. You golf a lot. I saw on your Instagram you were golfing with Jalen Rose. What's your golf game like? Are you just as competitive as you were in the ring as you are on the course?
I think that may be the culprit of my not scoring scoring big time. I love golf. It really is. But the thing about it, though, because, in boxing, the opponent moves. So you got to hit. That golf ball just sits right there waiting for you to hit it.
Yeah.
And we miss it sometimes.
So did you take Jalen Rose's money? I mean, or did he get the best of you?
I would, he got the best of me.
That's all right. I'm pretty bad myself, but I go out and it's fun. That's the best part. But Let's get into it, Ray. We're going to, you know, talk about your fabulous career, go down memory lane a little bit, as much as you will be willing to talk with us. There's so much going on in today's boxing world, but it's always fun for me to kind of immerse myself in the glory days. And man, were they glorious. We can start, I guess, with the Olympics all the way back. I wanted to find your, what I thought would be your Mount Rushmore of moments, four big moments. It's hard to get down to just four, but I'll start with the Olympic trials. And did you, I want to ask you right off the bat, did you think that starting off with the Olympics, having so many eyeballs on you, having so much cameras and all that, you know, attention, do you think that kind of like helped set you up or help make you like mature on the scene faster, which would, you know, get you in line for some big fights down the road?
I don't know, because the fact of the matter was or is, I was not going to go pro after the Olympics. I was going to go University of Maryland, further my education, get a good job, and life goes on. The only reason I turned pro was because of my dad. My dad was sick, really, really sick. Mm-hmm. And I turned pro to pay the bills.
Yeah.
And one thing led to another. I said, you know, this is okay. And plus I had good people around me, Dad. Mm-hmm. I had my trainer, James Morton, Charlie Brotman, Pepe Carrera. I mean, I can go down the road, go down that line of all these individuals who took care of me, who watched my back, put it that mm-hmm. way, watched my back, who were in my corner.
Yeah, that's so important. I mean, that's something I wanted to touch on too, is this, it seemed like you were ahead of your game when it came to the finances, when it came to the business side of things. Mike Trainer is super intriguing to me. You know, a lot of boxing fans these days are into the business side of things. They're into the politics of it. To not align yourself with a trainer, I feel like is so ahead of its time. And like the only guy that does that today is Canelo Alvarez. And he had to earn that. He didn't get that till he was in his 30s now, where he's this, you know, free agent, sort of say. But man, that was a shrewd move. And I feel like you maximized, you know, every dollar, as you should have, with this, you know, worked out deal with Mike Trainer and not having a promoter. That was pretty damn smart.
Well, you know, I don't take full credit for that. It was it was Jenks Morton who actually introduced me to Mike Trainer.
Right.
And this is the guy, you know. They say, you want, because they asked me after the Olympics, say, what do you want? Do you want to become a movie star or you want to be a boxer? I said, I want to be a movie star. I didn't, you know, again, I didn't want to be a professional fighter because I've heard horrible stories mm-hmm. of how they've been misled, taken advantage of, and what have you. I didn't want that in my life. But you know, again, I have to thank all the my sponsors, investors, who put money up. I mean, I'm in my gym right now, and there's like 30 guys who loaned me $1,000. And my first professional fight, I made between 40 and 50 thousand, which at that time was unprecedented. Mm-hmm. And I paid them off, became a free agent, did my thing.
Nuts. That's awesome. I mean, that's what it's all about, is maximizing the dollar. It's prize fighting for a reason. I think that you always had that mentality going into your fights, is how can I maximize, you know, my earning potential for my family, for little Ray. And he was a big part of it growing up. And that's such a cool story. But being in the ring for that Olympics, I know that it has to mean a lot to you. You know, watching some of these documentaries, the King's Doc, you know, when you did defeat Andres Aldama, you did get that gold medal. And you know, it was a time where, you know, U.S. boxing, you know, it wasn't a lot going on. This is post Muhammad Ali. It's pretty damn cool that he was there, you know, calling some of your fights while you were up the ranks there in the amateurs. But can you just take us back to that, standing on that podium, hearing the national anthem, you know, that feeling of winning, which you, I know that you're obsessed with. That must have been like a pretty cool moment.
Well, it goes even beyond that, because winning that gold medal, Andres Aldama, the Cuban, knocked out, annihilated everybody. Mm-hmm. I remember, because so vividly, because you can watch the previous fights, and if you go into this room, clubhouse, whatever the case may be, and I was sitting in there, and the lights were dark, and they were showing different fights, and they showed Aldous Adamas knocking the guy out, and then they said, well, he's going to fight Ray Leonard next. Oh, he's going to knock out Ray Leonard. I creeped out of that. I left that room, because I know what people were thinking, mm-hmm. rightfully so, because again, this guy could whack.
Yeah.
But I just outboxed him. That was one of the greatest moments, if not the greatest moment of my career.
Yeah, it had to be something special. And Aldama, he went on to win the gold in 80, So that just showed you. I mean, you upended some of his plans, and you—it was like kind of like a thing, like a sign of things to come. You know, defying all the odds. You know, going up against guys that were maybe bigger, going up against guys that were maybe more powerful. But that was a heck of a moment. Howard Cosell really propping you up. You know, it's so funny. I was watching the doc and Al Bernstein, I believe it was, you know, it felt like Harold Cosell kind of like latched onto you as he did to Ali. There's a lot of parallels between you and Ali, but sitting beside Howard Cosell, I mean, that's pretty epic too. At that time, this fight had so much buildup. It had so much hype. Did Duran, I've seen some of the stories, read some of the stories. Did Duran really do some of these tricks? Did he really try to get under your family's skin, your wife's skin, your head too?
Well, that he did. He did that. That actually occurred. He would, you know, and we're friends now. Mm-hmm. I'll let you know that. We're friends now. Good friends. Close friends. But in that particular moment, that time, that fight, he got under my skin. He would, you know, curse me, curse my wife. He upset me so much, so bad, that I said, I'm gonna beat him at his own game. I'm gonna stand toe to toe, which was crazy. But it was already drilled, Dad. It was drilled in my head that I could beat this son of a at his own game. Mm-hmm. And so by the end of the, I don't know, 12th round, 13th round, because back then it was 15 rounds.
Right.
You know, I realized that I was behind the judge's scorecard because he hit me everywhere and everything, with everything. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, that was, he certainly
let's talk,
did.
Let's talk about the win.
Yeah, I was going to get to that. You have to set it up. You know, I do want to say though, Ray, you went 27 of 75 in the 15th round. You outlanded Duran 52-31 over the final two rounds. Yeah, you did elect to stand and trade. It was a close fight. But also what I love back in that era was a loss didn't define a fighter like it does today. So a guy loses today, they're ready to write him off. It's just, I really wish that went away, and immersing myself in the 80s and watching, you know, reading. And I just wish it would get back to that. But we'll get to the rematch right now, right? November 1980. We know that your buddy Duran was partying, enjoying the fruits of his labor, blowing up in weight. Very smart on your part and your team's part to enable get that contract, to get that immediate rematch. I know maybe he wasn't fully focused on it, but that was the fight. That was the fight where, you know, obviously the No Mas incident and the 30 for 30 was great. I'm happy that you guys are friends now, and happy that you guys, you know, you're all friends with your adversaries. I feel like that's a great thing too, is the respect level. But let's go to the rematch. What was your mindset heading in? Like the mindset heading in for the first fight obviously was, I'm going to beat this guy's ass because he's, you know, talking about my family. How did you feel about the second one? How did your mindset change in just 8 months?
After that fight, I took my wife to Hawaii just to get her away because she fainted at the fight.
Wow.
At the first fight, yeah. And I took her there, and people, you know, fans were saying, hey, Sugar, you could have won that fight, man, if you boxed them. I kept hearing this, kept hearing that. And I said, you know what? They were right. So I called Mike Train. I said, Mike, I want to fight Duran, a rematch, ASAP. He said, are you on vacation? I said, yes, but I can come home. He said, Ray, enjoy your vacation. I came home the next day. Wow. And we made it happen, you know. Naturally, Duran being the champ got more money. It wasn't about that at that time. And I said, I'm a boxer. I'm gonna do this. I'm going to do that. But most people thought that I still couldn't win because Duran had my head, had my mind. Mm-hmm. But I used my hand speed. I did the bolo punches.
Yeah.
You know, Duran to me was like a bully at that time. And if you hit a bully back, he'll do one or two things. He'll kick your butt or he'll run away. And I thought that would take place. And in all due respect towards Duran, I didn't hear him say no mas, but he did this.
What right. is it? That's what is the it? Universal sign in boxing for I had enough.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, but when he did that, I thought it was a trick to get me closer to him. So I was already, you know.
Yeah, you had his number that one. I mean, you outlanded him 2-1. You landed 60% of your power shots. Did you know that he was partying like in the lead up? It's not like today, like where you can just look on Twitter or you can, you know, see a picture or something from a cell phone. Did you hear any rumblings that he was not 100%?
Well, I knew that. And also I heard that. Hell, I did that. I mean, I'm no different. After the fight, I load up. I just never gained over like 10 pounds.
Right.
A lot of fighters do get up to, you know, 30 pounds overweight, 40 pounds over, 50 pounds. Mm-hmm. I don't know how that happened. Well, it can't happen, but I took advantage of that. I approached that fight with more psychology,
right?
Spiritual, making people laugh at the great Roberto Duran. That's what took place.
Yeah, it's so epic, man. It's like you got to have these adversaries. You got to have these dance partners. And, you know, today there is that today, you know, in the heavyweight division, you need to have that other guy. And Duran was that for the entire decade of the 70s. And he had this invincibility. What was he, 70-1 when he headed into that first fight with you, you know, knocking everyone out, but at lightweight too, the jumping up weights, but all you guys did, the four kings, is super impressive to me because we don't see that too often these days. Maybe Canelo is maybe the exception, but for Duran to hop up in weight like that was impressive. For you to kind of brush off that first loss of your career and then refocus and take advantage. And not only that, just, you know, beat him at his game, you know, he got him to legitimately quit. I mean, it's a little upsetting though, hearing, you know, what happened to him afterwards, you know, heading back to Panama, you know, he couldn't talk to anybody. You know, he went from hero to zero. The only way he could go outside is if he brought his pet lion with him, so no one would go after him. You know, what did you feel right after? Was it just like, wow, I'm so happy, elated that I beat him? Was there any bit like, oh, you know, part of me is a little, you know, I feel a little bit upset about, you know, him and how he's going to be perceived as a quitter?
You know, I felt so bad for him, for his country. Just people in general, or boxing fans in general, how they try to self-analyze what took place in the ring. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a weird thing. Was it bizarre? No question about that. Would you ever expect Roberto Duran? No. No one. I mean, but whatever took place. You know, as far as I'm concerned, he came and redeemed himself when he came back and he beat a number of other fighters and became champion again.
Mm-hmm. At middleweight, too.
At middleweight, I really felt so bad for Roberto. And then when he fought Marvin Hagler, mm-hmm. I was at ringside.
Right.
And after the fight was over with, because he surprised me the way he handled himself, he said, you fight him, you beat him. And that gave me a thought, because that's when I was contemplating coming back or, right. or leaving the ring for good. Yeah. But then I tell you, Roberto Duran is... If he's one of the most incredible fighters I've first of all ever met and ever faced.
I mean, people go nuts when they see him still. He's got that air of invincibility. He's got that air about him. You know, when he enters a room or when he's at a fight, you know, I cover a lot of fights and you hear that he's in town. It's like, whoa, let's go get a glimpse of him. Let's try to get a handshake. And he's so happy too. He's just like a happy-go-lucky guy. He takes pictures with everyone. I mean, he was that guy. And man, to fight him twice at age, what were you, 21 or 22?
22.
Jeez, man. That's another thing too, that your career is just so much different than these guys today. I want to ask you this. Do you feel like that's the right way to go about it? If you have the talent, you certainly did. You have the pedigree, you certainly did. To get these big fights before you're 30. We're seeing these big fights now in boxing happen after they're 30. They want it to marinate. They want it to reach its highest potential. But from a fighting standpoint, obviously you believe that to get these guys young, I want to fight when I'm in my physical prime, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, naturally you want to fight. You want to be in your prime too. But there's so much talent out there. You know, there's so much talent. And I see guys like Mayweather. Mayweather mm-hmm. was always impressive to me back in the day.
Right.
And I told him, we was on a plane together, and I said, man, you're going to be champion, and you're going to be special. And I said that to him because I actually felt that presence. There's so many incredible fighters on the that Boxing take a dip. You know, boxing's not like it used to. Boxing's still good.
No, I 100%. I'm a big champion of that. You know, I'm the you got to deal with these, you know, older media types that live through your era. So it's kind of, I understand where they're coming from at times to say, like, you know, it's not like it was in the 80s, but like nostalgia is a hell of a drug. And obviously we're going heavy with the nostalgia in this interview, but boxing is, there's so much talent today. If they would just fight, like these lightweights, Ray, you know, like Ryan Garcia, Teofimo Lopez, Gervonta Davis, Devin Haney, they could do what you guys did. They could fight four times, you know, they could fight round robin, you know, big a boost to the sport. But you know, there, it isn't as easy as it was back when there was just HBO Showtime. It was just Aram or King. There's so many more hands now. There's so many more distractions. There's so many more people saying, oh no, I'll promise you this, you know, I'll overpay you essentially. And then, you know, we get freezed out of these fights. But who am I to say that you can't make as much money as you possibly can? The fans get upset, but you know, a rational person will say, you know, if a promoter comes down, it's going to offer you, you know, three times what you're really worth. How are you not going to take that?
You know, I never got involved with who I was going to fight. Mm-hmm. I mean, the only time that happened was when I came back after a 5-year hiatus and said, I'll fight Hagler. But then again, the latter part of my career, when I should have retired, but maybe I was just so hard headed. I just, you know, when I feel or know I can win, I get in that ring.
Yeah.
You know, I'll get in that ring.
That's awesome. That's great. That's what it's all about. I mean, that's that champion mentality. Let's go to Tommy Hearns quick. I mean, we had to come down the back streets, me and Tommy. Ray was on the main street, but we still arrived at the main destination. As only Manny Stewart can put it in such eloquent words, this was this the most brutal of all your fights?
It wasn't eloquent. I mean, Emmanuel Stewart, we were so close. We were so close. I'm sorry.
It's all right.
So close. And he first of all, that fight was inevitable.
Right.
I mean, when I saw, I was in Detroit. I saw him, saw one of his fights or two of his fights. Mm-hmm. And he would just knock guys out. He was a freak of nature, being a welterweight. And I knew Tommy could box if he wanted to, when he needed to. And Emmanuel Stewart, we always talk about the possibilities of us fighting each other. And I said, yeah, just talk to my people. And it happened. It happened, you know, came to fruition.
Right.
And that, I mean, let me tell you something, Dan. That fight, because I, with Muhammad Ali, my dear friend, mm-hmm. we talked one day. He said, Ray, when I fought Joe Frazier, it was the closest thing to death. And I looked at him like he was crazy. I'm like, closest thing to death? He said, yeah, that was the closest thing to death. When I fought Tommy Hearns, just like when I fought Roberto Duran, just like when I fought Hagler, Benitez, it was the closest thing to death. Donnie Lalonde, the closest thing to death. I had to pull up. I had to, I call it intestinal fortitude, to reach down deep and bring it up. We all can't activate it, but those that can wins the fight.
Wow. That is something. I got chills right now thinking of Ali, and I did write that down, the closest thing to death. And it's very, very powerful, because not in any other sport do you have that. You know, your football maybe, but not really. Basketball, I mean, these are regular sports. That's why I always say you don't play boxing. But, you know, Hearns was boxing well. I mean, he landed so many jabs in that fight, and he also followed up with power shots. You were probably down on the cards, and then the 14th round comes, and one of the most epic corner moments in the history of boxing. You're blowing it, son. You're blowing it. Go ahead.
Dan, I swear to God, man, that was the perfect soundbite coming from Angelo Dundee. I didn't want to hear anything else but that, although I didn't know he would say that, but he said the right thing at the right time, which activated my drive.
That's nuts. The fact that you could just turn it on when your eye is basically shut, you're fighting, like you said, this guy that is, you know, 6'4", 147 pounds with dynamite in both hands. You get that stoppage. that was when I tweeted this last night. That's the fight that made you, right?
Oh, I would say. I mean, the fight with Benitez, Wilfred Benitez, I tell you what, I went to the hospital after the fight for dehydration, total dehydration. I actually beat Benitez with heart and didn't give up and give in. But Tommy was like, I mean, come on. It was,
23 years old. I mean, thrown right into the fire with Tommy Hearns and to get a win like that. I just wish I was there for that. I wish like today's world could see that. Like what would Twitter erupt? Like one of the most epic comeback wins, 14th round. Like there is no more 14th round. A moment like that, the Dundee moment. Your life, your career, you know this. It's like a movie, right?
Yep.
It's absolutely.
And also, Dan, the thing about it, when I hurt somebody, rock a guy, 9 times out of 10, it's over. It's going to be over. Because
right.
I had that drive, that heart, and that because it was the availability. Mm-hmm. With Tommy, I rocked Tommy. I put Tommy down, whatever the case may be. I take full advantage of that.
Do you think there people were saying, since you have such a great smile, great looks, you know, coming up the ranks, and they would be shocked by your punching power, right?
Well, they knew I could punch. I mean, I was considered a puncher, but I was more so considered a finisher.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once I get someone in trouble.
Right. Well, it's time to move on to a comeback, a retirement, a lot of time for you to reflect. I do want to get to the Hagler fight, but during that time off, the fans know the timeline. If you don't, you know, you had to retire because of a detached retina. The modern medicine isn't what it like today because Errol Spence is coming back from that. And that time out of the ring, those 5 years, not the greatest, you know, like you said, a lot of fighters too, you know, they talk about this all the time, you know, time when fighters have a lot of time on their hands and they have a lot of money, things can go south. And because boxing keeps these guys in line, that was certainly the case with you, right? Your time away from the sport.
Yeah, it really, I mean, it showed me, it showed me how much I love competing. Because when I was retired temporarily for the partial detached retina, even my ophthalmologist said, Ray, you know, your eye, you can fight again. If you want to fight again, you can fight again. He said, in fact, it's going to be stronger than your other eye. And so, but I was trying to please my fans, my family. And when I did the interview or I made the announcement, I said, well, I'm gonna quit because people say Ray's smart, and I want to be smart, right? Be considered smart, but I didn't think properly. I didn't think about me, what I had to deal with. I was only 24, 25. I mean, because people say, hey, man, you got money and you got fame, and it's not at some point. It's not about that. It's about my legacy. It's about my who I am. What I want to do, I want to fight Hagler, I want to fight this guy, I want to fight that guy before I retire. And I got involved with drugs, man, and alcohol. If it wasn't for my lovely wife, Bernadette, now, I wouldn't be here. Because she said, Ray, you're an alcoholic. And then, because cocaine was a big thing. And I stopped, you know, I stopped the cocaine one day. I just say, I don't want this anymore. But the alcohol almost took me out. It nearly took me out. I tell you, man, life, there is a God. There is a God.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, your life is a fight. You're a fight. I mean, you're 25 years old, man. People start their careers at 25. You're being told that your career has to end.
But I understand and I thank them. I love my fans and my family members for they care. They want me to get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But again, my ophthalmologist said, Ray, you know, if you want to come back, you can come back. He said, because technology now has improved significantly.
Mm-hmm. And did. When you brought up that 1982 November when you the event in Baltimore. I mean, it's now an infamous moment, an infamous night, part of your career, and you announce your retirement. You bring Hagler out there. Did you? I don't know how to put this, but bringing out Hagler, he took a certain offense to it. It seemed like he was pretty upset because he wanted that fight bad. He made it very, very clear.
And I brought him there. I, you know, kind of made him say, you know, I suggest you should come because I got something to say.
Yeah.
I felt bad afterwards. I really did. I really did. Because I heard that it bothered him significantly. Because when I said, well, you know, a fight like this, I was leading people in. I was kind of making the pie a lot bigger or small or sweeter. And I said, but a fight like this, unfortunately, it'll never happen. Those words are there, crushed Hagler, because he felt I brought a man just to kind of, I didn't do it to embarrass him. And I love this man. I respect this man. But I used that kind of like, you know, kind of laugh and stop from crying.
Yeah, that was a moment. That really was. And I was saying to myself, it's like, damn, Ray really has a great way of eliciting like a response from people. Like, you knew exactly how to play the game at times, you know, to get people to care, because you have to do that in boxing. Self-promotion is everything. This isn't a team sport. You don't have a league pushing you. You have to do it yourself. And you certainly made waves and you got people to care and you made things feel bigger. So in the back of your mind, you were thinking, maybe eventually I will fight Marvin, but it's not going to happen now. And I'm going to make a big, have a nice night in Baltimore. But eventually you did get in there with Marvin. He goes on to fight Hagler. Got it right behind me. That's actually from the actual fight. And, you know, you said you saw something. You saw something. You believed you can beat him. And I will never forget. My dad tells me these stories all the time. You told my dad that I'm going to fight. I'm coming back and I'm going to fight Hagler. And I think my dad had like a quick pause or like maybe just saw a facial expression. And you were like, wait a second, Bob, you don't think I can beat him? And my dad was just like, I didn't say that. I didn't say that. But I mean, he's thinking what everyone was thinking at the time. I mean, 5 out of the 7 ex-middleweight champs picked Hagler. No one was expecting you to win. It's the fourth fight on your Mount Rushmore that I made up for you, Ray. It's Marvin Hagler, April 1987. Doesn't get any bigger than this. I wasn't even born yet, but I was probably wishing I was there. What a night. You come out of retirement. What did you see? How did you believe that you could beat the indestructible Marvin Hagler?
You know, I just watched him. I watched him against Roberto Duran. And Duran, again, after that fight, Duran walked over to me and said, Ray,
you told my dad that I'm going to fight. I'm coming back and I'm going to fight Hagler. And I think my dad had like a quick pause or like maybe just saw a facial expression. And you were like, wait a second, Bob, you don't think I can beat him? And my dad was just like, I didn't say that. I didn't say that. But I mean, he's thinking what everyone was thinking at the time. I mean, 5 out of the 7 ex-middleweight champs picked Hagler. No one was expecting you to win. It's the fourth fight on your Mount Rushmore that I made up for you, Ray. It's Marvin Hagler, April 1987. Doesn't get any bigger than this. I wasn't even born yet, but I was probably wishing I was there. What a night. You come out of retirement. What did you see? How did you believe that you could beat the indestructible Marvin Hagler?
You know, I just watched him. I watched him against Roberto Duran. Duran, again, after that fight, Duran walked over to me and said, Ray, you box him, you beat him. And I'm like, okay, because I contemplated retirement, but Hagler was destroying people. He still was destroying people. And I don't know, I just felt that thing. And when he fought, I can't think of the guy's name he fought last.
Mugabe?
John the Beast Mugabe. That fight there, I have a better jab than him. I'm faster than him. I can do it. And I swear, I choreographed the fight in my head. I actually choreographed the fight from the speaking and the press conferences. I knew what I had to do. So a lot of times when the guys are fighting Hagler, they say, I'm gonna kick his ass, I'll beat his ass. I never said anything derogatory. So I never made him mad. And the last thing Hagler said at the last press conference was, I'm gonna surprise all of you. I'm out box Ray. I said, I got him. And that's exactly what took place in that ring.
Yeah. He came out very timid. He came out, he threw 16 punches in the first round. And, you know, one of the cooler nuggets of our company at CompuBox is you guys hiring my dad and Logan Hobson, who was his partner at the time, to kind of come up with a game plan, you know, go over the numbers, give us a scouting report on Marvin. And what we came up with was the fact that he started slow. You know, he not only did he start slow, he came out and boxed you, you know, orthodox, which was crazy. I mean, it goes that talk about something that's going to go down in the record books. It's like everyone knows this was a huge fight. And everyone knows that the first three or four rounds, you were clearly in his head, because why did he give away those rounds? It just gave you so much momentum, gave you so much confidence, right?
It gave me more than confidence. It gave me, it was confidence that he did, because it gave me a chance to kind of settle down, because I'm fighting marvelous Marvin Hagler. And then I remember after the first punch, I said, it still works. the first jab I hit him.
Yeah.
Hagler also believed, because I had a guy go to his training camp, he believed the first guy in the middle of the ring wins the fight.
Wait, is that the guy that you had like a mole, right?
Yeah.
I have his name. What was his name? My dad sent me it. J.D. Brown. Wait, you sent a mole into his camp?
It was only J.D. I sent J.D. to the camp one time. And just to see what Hagler is considering or thinking.
How did you do that? Did he wear like a disguise or a disguise, but no one knew who he was anyway?
No, I don't think. Well, no, that JD was pretty well known, but I don't think I think JD brought a cap and sunglasses.
These sunglasses and like the mustache.
Maybe the mustache.
So yeah, that fight, the ninth round, I feel like I posted it on Twitter and I got a huge response. There was a moment in that ninth round where, you know, he was starting to get the momentum back. He was starting to find you. Maybe fatigue was setting in a little bit on your behalf to, you know, haven't been in the ring in a while. And he had you up against the ropes, and he landed a left hand that probably, you know, would have dropped a lot of guys, and you ate it. But then he had you up in the corner, and it was a fight or flight moment, I thought, for you, just like your whole life, pretty much. You flurried and you spun him around. He hit you again and you flurried again, and the crowd went crazy, and the judges clearly saw it in your favor. That ninth round, that moment, those 40 seconds, I think, will stand the test of time.
What people don't know or didn't know, that when I said, yell 30 seconds, because I would flurry, and that's what the judges will see, the last thing the judges will see. It was kind of a psychological fight, if you will.
It was. It was very psychological. I mean, that was the edge that you had, especially, you know, you've been through so much in your life up until that point, maybe 30 years old, but you're an old 30 and you're a wise 30. So you needed that to beat Hagler that night. I mean, he was almost looked at as unbeatable. It's a fight that still to this day, even when I posted it on Twitter, right? People were arguing about who won.
It's okay. It was a close fight. No question about that.
Yeah.
And
you still think you won?
No.
You thought you lost?
I thought I did enough. Put it this way. Even if I didn't get the decision, I would have been okay with that. You with me? I mean, most people in my corner didn't think I could win. Even my big brother, Roger, who got me into boxing, didn't think I could win.
Yeah. He found out from the news, right, that you were fighting Hagler. Yeah. He called you up.
But again, people knew that I was out there drinking. I was doing cocaine and everything. So a lot of my friends, sports guys and everything else, they said, no way. Rightfully so. But I cleaned my – the thing about it, I had discipline. I cleaned myself out for over a year.
Right.
No drugs, no alcohol, no nothing.
Yeah, it's not easy. It was a different time then, too. The media was, like, more friendly with athletes, more friendly with fighters. If they knew something that you were up to no good, they didn't report it. So maybe that's why none of the media were picking you.
Well, yeah. But they majority of them did not say, you know, I saw Ray doing cocaine.
Or right.
I saw Ray being drunk.
Right. There was much more of a code back then.
Yeah, that was respect.
Mm-hmm. talk about respect, you and Marvin. Obviously, he goes off. He never fights again. Tries to get a rematch. Just didn't come to fruition. He moves to Italy. Starts the second half of his life. Becomes a movie star. I think it's the coolest thing ever. Him just never fighting again just adds to his legacy. You know, you never really saw Marvin beat up. You only saw him, you know, in close fights, whether it was with you, whether it was with Duran, whether it was with Mugabe, you know, Somit Hearns. Obviously, he passed on last year. I still can't believe it. It's crazy that you think about it. I mean, it's crazy that I won't be able to get him on my show and talk to him about some of his glorious moments. The shock of it must have been just immense for you.
My son, Ray, called me. He said, "Pops," he said, "Marvin has that virus." I said, "Well, I wish him well." And then he called me back about half an hour, 40 minutes. He said, "Pops, he's gone." I said, "What do you mean he's gone?" "He's gone. He's dead." And I'm waiting for the punchline. I'm waiting for him to laugh. He never laughed. And I said, "Are you serious, man? Are you absolutely 100% sure?" He said, "Well, not 100." I said, "Check, check, check." And when I heard that was true, I shed a tear. I mean, Marvin, it was so tough for him to lose to anybody except me, mm-hmm. you know, because they all called me kind of white collar fighters, whatever that meant. But things were, you know, like I was network made and, you know, but I don't know, man, it still bothered me, but I pray that it's not true. But when I really heard the sadness, the sad thing about him going, leaving us, it was hard. It was really hard.
Yeah. It almost felt like someone like him could never die. You know, he was just the prototype. Exactly. He was like the prototype, his body. He just looked like a fighter. He was so strong looking. That's why I loved him as a kid. I was just like, this guy is so strong. He's just like a man's man. Like he'll never die. I mean, like the same thing. I was shocked. I didn't believe it at first. But did you guys have, what was your guys' interaction? What was your last interaction with him? Did you stay in touch with him at all?
Well, unlike me and Tommy, you know, we call each other, you know, every couple of weeks or month. And even Duran, I'll see Duran, you know, we hug and everything. But when I saw Marvin at these fights or whatever, we'll hug and we'll say, "Hey, man, how you doing? You know, how's family?" This, we were respectful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was a lot of respect between the four of you guys. You know, you guys are connected forever. So that when he died, you know, it's set. It's like a part of you died. Part of Roberto Duran died. A part of Tommy Hearns died.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I said, "Guys, let's do a documentary, guys, or a story, or a movie, whatever." And I said, "Let's do it before we pass or we die, before we die." I was saying that, you know, out of being funny. But this is years before this tragedy took place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The four of you in a ring with a full crowd, it would be an event. It would be it would be unbelievable. It would be sad. Maybe you bring up a movie. I mean, your life is a movie. Who would you want to play you in the movie?
Who?
Yeah. You want to give, I'll give you my choice. Usher.
I was going to say, no question about that. I mean, I was thinking about somebody else, but Usher is my man.
Yeah, that's your guy, right?
Usher is my man. I love Usher, man. He did a fantastic job. I said, "I never did that."
You could dance better. You were Usher.
Yeah, but me and Usher, we worked out a couple of times, and he can hold his own.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's great, man. I know someone told me that you're buddies with Jay-Z.
Yes, yes.
You know, he likes boxing, right?
Yeah,
that'd be kind of cool to watch a fight with him. I saw him at Mayweather-Pacquiao fight, and he was dressed to the nines. And there's a lot of these guys love boxing. Why do you think that is? These stars, these actors.
You know, man, it's like me. I mean, like golf. I love golf. You know, Tiger was out there.
Yeah,
Tiger Woods. Mm-hmm. I love basketball. I mean, I love all these other sports too. It's just that. That winning mentality.
Yeah. There's a realness to boxing. You know, they're actors. They play fake things, but then they come to a fight and they see real. This is real. You know, this is a show. You know, you get all dressed up. You wear your best suit to a fight. You watch these guys slug it out, do a fight, a sport that's been around for hundreds and hundreds of years, a sport that, you know, you left your mark on it, man. And to be able to sit and talk to you about your career, man, it's epic for me. It's really special. And I know our fans will enjoy this. I've been saying this to Roy Jones. I said this to Brian Hopkins. And this obviously pertains to, you know, Marvin Hagler too, passing on. It's like, we have to celebrate our sport, boxing, our living legends more. We have to give you your flowers while you can still smell them, you know, like NBA All-Star Game. They just did their 75-year anniversary. That was such a great celebration, you know, past and present, mixing it up. Michael Jordan, you had, you know, Oscar Robinson, everyone around hugging, you know, and I just wish boxing had that, but I just wanted to say, thank you for this, and thank you for everything you've given the sport. You're a living legend, and you gave it all to the sport, and I think fans will appreciate that forever.
Well, you know what, Dan? I'm an optimist by nature. It's going to happen. It's going to be. We'll get out just due.
Yes, you're right. I mean, you got your just due, but we want to see, one night we get all the legends back together in a ring around like a big Canelo fight, and you guys can just hear the roar of the crowd and appreciate what you mean for the sport. And I know you know what you mean, but just to hear it, you know, like just a little appreciation, maybe for some of the other fighters too.
Yeah, look forward to it, buddy.
All right, Ray, thank you so much, and enjoy the golf game.
All right, Dan, thanks, babe.
Wow, what an interview with Ray Leonard. And I just want to let you guys know that that interview was brought to you by KO Tickets. They're sponsoring our show now. Jim Boone over there has doing a wonderful job selling tickets since 1999. Big fights coming up. Chocolatito, Virgil Ortiz, Edgar Berlanga here in New York City, Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano. Go to Jim Boone and KO Tickets. He's your guy. You don't have to deal with some of these websites. You don't have to deal with some of these apps. You can call Jim directly. I've done it myself and gotten tickets to a big fight through Jim. It's 702-591-1638. 702-591-1638. And the first 10 buyers to mention today's show with Sugar Ray Leonard, Inside Boxing Live, will receive a free copy of Ring Magazine's November issue celebrating the 40-year anniversary of our boy Sugar Ray Leonard and Tommy Hearns. That's kotickets.com. And that interview with Ray was also brought to you by the Two Beers Podcast. You got time for two beers, then you got time for the Two Beers Podcast. There's two regular guys talking about regular things. Guys like to talk about sports, movies, streaming, no hot takes, no clickbait. I've been on the show. I really enjoyed it. Just good, honest conversation like you have with your friends at the bar, camping, or at a barbecue. So grab two beers and come join the Two Brew Crew, the Two Beers Podcast, the pod for the everyman.